down that gavel. Come on. There we are. There,
there
we
you go. Don't worry about the glass underneath. It's okay.
Thursday, 2.
Did I say that was my time?
Mm-mm. You said your time was 2:30.
Oh, okay.
Fine. I think we can call this meeting to order, and it's the first order of business as a quorum to call to order. Can we go with 3?
Well, since there are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 members,
actually,
I would think 2 to open, 3 to do business.
Well, yeah. I think on the books they're supposed to be 5 plus me, so that makes 6.
So 3 to do business.
Okay.
And therefore 2 to open.
All right.
No, there's 6?
No.
3 and 4?
I think you have to do 3 and 4.
You want to do a majority to open?
The official list that came out didn't have Bernice on it.
3 isn't a majority of 6.
So we're down to 5.
Oh, okay.
Oh, so it's 5. Okay.
Yeah, if it stays at 5, then we should do 2 to open and 3 to pass.
Okay. So
what time are we going to be meeting? Because this changed like 3 times. And
yeah, well, that was because there were so many other meetings. I need to ask all of you about that. Your availability is?
I can, the earliest on an average day, like today here, I'm not early because I'm not teaching today, it's for just exams, 3:15. If you want to start at 3, that's fine.
Whatever you want.
Is Tuesday a good day, or should we do it for Wednesday?
No, not Wednesday. No, Tuesday.
Tuesday. Okay. So let's say 3:15.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's fine. That's okay with you.
After we get things move along a bit, I don't think we'll be meeting every week. I think that for the time being, we have some matters to deal with. But after that, it shouldn't be. I don't think it will be every week.
Okay.
Okay. So 2 to get started and 3 to vote. And 3:15, is that going to be our meeting time?
Mm-hmm.
Tuesdays.
Well, it's like 10 after now, or just so it's only
yeah.
5 more minutes.
No, exactly. I was going to say, wow, we're early.
that's an accomplishment here.
I'm really seeing that.
We're fortunate this afternoon. We've invited Dr. Mitchell to come. You want to come and
sure.
Would you?
Oh, here, come up the set. Is Lyndon coming?
I don't know. I think he's left the building.
Okay.
How are you?
Good.
How's everybody?
Since you have 2 new members of the board here,
yes.
I did sit in on your budget presentation, but I think it would be a good idea mm-hmm. to sort of bring us up to date.
Sure.
And talk to us about future plans and the possibility of consolidation and all that.
Okay. What I put together actually is kind of an overview, kind of brief overview of what we do. I shortened it from, I guess I've given this some of this before, but I just shortened it and I figured maybe I could just touch a couple of the highlights and then in addition to that I can then kind of update you on things that, you know, where those projects and things are going and what we're doing. Pages are not numbered, but we cover basically 3 disability areas. We cover mental health, drugs and alcohol, and we cover developmental disabilities, mental retardation. So those are the 3 areas. We have contracts with 162 agencies in Westchester. So we are, it's a very service-rich system. Those are mostly private, not-for-profits, et cetera. Just to give you an idea of the size of the system, in 2007, which is the last year we have countywide data, we delivered 1 million units of substance abuse services just to county residents. Now, that's not 1 million people, because some people got more than one mm-hmm. service in a year, but it's still a huge number. We have a county which has 1,000 inpatient mental health beds, which is more per capita than almost anywhere else on earth.
And how filled are they?
They are always filled, but on any given day, over 50% of them are filled with non-Westchester County residents.
Mm-hmm.
It has become an import business. It brings in about $250 million to Westchester County.
Oh.
So it's not a bad thing. And all those facilities were developed, you know, over the last 150, 200 years as places for New York City people who had mental health issues
to
get out of the city.
These are county-run facilities?
They are not county-run. They are basically private, like places like New York Presbyterian here in White Plains. You have private hospitals like Four Winds in Katona. You've got St. Vincent's, who was in the news today as maybe being banked.
I thought that was St. Vincent's. Oh, is that affiliated with it?
Yep. So they may be going back into bankruptcy for the second time in the last 5 years.
I never knew they were related.
Yes, they're actually related. And unfortunately, the St. Vincent's up here, which provides about 20% of all the mental health services in the county, are provided by that one institution. It's very large. They are a profitable portion of St. Vincent's. So the creditors for the downtown, which is $300 million in debt, the creditors down there want St. Vincent's downtown to sell off their assets. And one of those assets is the facility here in Westchester, because it's a profit-making venture. And there's been a hostile bid actually made for the whole St. Vincent's system today for $150 million. It's worth clearly way more than that.
Do we know who?
It's called the Continuing Care Partners, I think, something like that.
Oh, okay. And it would be
Brezhnev, who is, yeah.
Clinics.
Right, and they want to eliminate all the inpatient beds and turn it into basically clinics. So that could have some impact on the county.
Because they had Christine Quinn on the radio just now.
Yes.
Saying, I will fight, we won't let
right.
this close, and because it impacts the...
Absolutely.
I guess her district in
yes.
New York City.
How many beds do they have now?
They have about 150 out of that 1,000. But they also do substance abuse, and they also have multiple sites. They have a site in Bronxville. They have housing in Portchester. I mean, they have a number of sites that they deliver different services. So it's a very, very large system. We, of course, hope they stay in the business, but they were telling me, I talked to the CEO today, who said, you know, there's a possibility that if it's sold off, it may not remain as a psychiatric facility. It may be sold off because the land that hospital is on is very valuable, and it could be sold off and turned into a country club. I mean, they don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So everything's up in the air right now with that. I don't know much more than what was in the paper, other than she told me nothing's definite yet.
Wow.
So that's a huge kind of out of left field. We knew this facility was doing well, so I never expected they were in any real fiscal trouble.
But they're a not-for-profit. They don't pay taxes, right?
No, they're right. They're not-for-profit, and of course they're affiliated with the Archdiocese. So it's trouble.
You know, I don't mean to. But this is odd, because first, I mean, the Archdiocese just sold off New York Medical College.
Yep.
And now they're going to sell off.
Right.
They're really divesting.
They are.
Well, they're in big trouble.
They are.
In big trouble
financially. Because these facilities.
This area really is getting hit.
Yeah.
Well, yes and no. I mean, hit defined in terms.
On the other hand, it might turn
over. If it gets turned into a golf club, that's a little tough, given that Mamaroneck Town is negotiating to buy a bankrupt golf club.
Mm-hmm.
So golf clubs may not be the way to go for fun profit.
But it could be it could be housing.
Could go condos.
The property is...
But that would be a zoning issue.
Yeah.
But we've got a lot of jobs there.
Right.
And I would think that would be very concerning.
That's
Plus,
true.
The inventory of beds, you need that inventory, or don't you? If 50% of those beds are filled by out-of-county people, and our first responsibility is to county people...
Correct.
Do we care in that sense?
Well, the inpatient beds... Since half of our beds countywide are not county residents, our county residents would not suffer if we had 500 fewer beds. Essentially, what we'd have is we'd be right sized for the population. Okay, so the beds are not a huge issue, except for
as long as they're first, they have the first right to the bed.
Right. Well, you know what they say is that we recruit from outside the county because we need to keep our beds full.
Okay.
It's a business, and we can't fill. There isn't enough demand from county residents.
Okay.
So. But it's their outpatient service system that is critical, because it's all those outpatient services
mm-hmm.
that keep people out of the hospital, in you know, out of emergency rooms, and in the community. So the outpatient service system would be hard to duplicate in any quick sort of fashion. And those services are needed and are primarily being accessed by county residents.
And the inpatient... it's primarily New York City?
The inpatient is a mix, about 50-50. It's about 50% county and 50%. It's New York City, it's Rockland, it's Orange, it's Dutchess. They get patients from as far away as 100 miles.
And that brings $250 million.
as a system, not just St. Vincent's itself.
Yeah, right.
Yes,
right, right.
The hospital beds together it's a pretty significant amount of money coming into the county.
Mm-hmm. If their outpatient programs were to be sacrificed to a real estate deal, who would likely pick them up? Are there existing the neighborhood health centers, for example? Would they be in a position to do that?
I mean, there are some not-for-profits who might be interested. One of the things that we're, if this looks like it's going to happen, what we do is it's part of the regulation that you can't close any health service, health or mental health, without a transition plan that is acceptable both to us and to the state.
So the Westchester County.
Yes, they would come to the state. Essentially, goes to the local government unit and says, "Is it okay with you guys?" And if it's okay with you, it's okay with most of the time. It's okay with us. We would not allow that to happen precipitously because we would argue that we can't accommodate those people who need services in 90 days. We would likely require a transition of probably a year. To be able to transition some of those services to other providers where there's interest. My sense is, though I didn't survey the other providers, probably some of those services would be picked up by other providers if they had to. I can't say all of them. So we're going to wait and see. If it looks like this is going to happen, we're going to insist, of course, and they'll cooperate that they have this plan submitted for our review.
Why don't you go on with your
presentation? Sure. So anyway, so
Shockwave just rolled over.
Yeah.
What's that?
Shockwave just rolled over. Sorry.
I know. Well, that to us too. I mean, so anyway, so that's so really we have two functions. One function is that we actually deliver services to citizens, and the other is that we're responsible for the oversight of the system in terms of quality, et cetera. So there are sort of several parts of the system I mentioned. We have a series of mental health clinics, which I've been talking about over the last couple of months, including the budget presentation as to where those clinics will be soon in the future. We also have adult mental health, children's mental health, drug and alcohol, and I mentioned developmental disabilities. The next page is our budget page. Our total budget's about just under $70 million. $51 million of that are grants, which are state and federal grants. Our operating budget, as you see, is about $18 million, and our tax levy, which we've been decreasing over the last 3 years, has been going down from, as you see, from $8.5 million to $8 million in 2010. And actually, if you look at the actual tax levy, we have underspent. For the last 2 years, we have not spent the amount of tax levy that has, we've not needed the amount of tax levy that was budgeted for us, primarily because we've been doing better on our revenue side. And because we've cut expenses, we've left positions vacant when we can. We've consolidated. We've recertified positions, et cetera. So we have not. So we're not a heavily tax levy dependent department, but we do need some. And the bulk of that, as you heard from that budget presentation last month, the bulk of our tax levy, I mean the biggest portion, I should say, is going to supplement the clinics, and that's one of the reasons why we're taking a very serious look at whether or not we should continue to provide mental health clinic services going into the future. And I have a couple pages specifically that address that on the next page. If you look at the top where it says DCMH operated clinics, we currently have five clinics: Yorktown, Mount Vernon, Mount Kisco, Peekskill, and Shack, which is a clinic located inside the shelter on the Grasslands campus. So that's five sites.
Where's the one in Peekskill located?
It is on, I believe, on Main Street in the same
in the
building
church?
With DSS. It's in the same, I think it's the county office building.
Okay.
And we did 25,000 visits in 2009. You can see our revenue has been approximately $5.8 million. Here's the problem. Our tax levy in 2010 to run those clinics is estimated about $1.8 million. So that's $1.8 million out of our total of about $7, $8 million. The problem is that Medicaid is imposing a reduction in our reimbursement. Now, this isn't just us. This is across the state. So that we are estimating over the next 3 years while they phase this fee reduction that our tax levy requirement in 2013 will go up to $3.5 million, double what we need now, which is another reason why we're taking a very serious look about whether we should continue to do this, because this is going to be a sinking ship financially.
Through the chair,
yes.
Can I just ask one quick?
Sorry.
Is this the same decrease in Medicaid that's levied against the anytime the county does any kind of public health service also?
This tax reduction is aimed solely at mental health services, outpatient mental health.
Okay.
We had been receiving a rate for the last 15 years that the federal government said we were being paid essentially illegally. Not us, but statewide. And
yeah.
What the reason was that the Medicaid program, was paying a very high fee. We get about $300 a visit. And part of that was for uncompensated care, for indigent care.
Mm-hmm.
And what Medicaid said was that a portion of those individuals were not Medicaid eligible. They were undocumented persons.
Mm-hmm.
They were people who may have earned over the limit in terms of Medicaid, but they came in as, I don't have any insurance, and I'm not eligible for Medicaid, so they came in as unable to pay. And Medicaid had an add-on to the base fee that covered the indigent care. And Medicaid, the feds, finally caught up with all this, and this is the only state.
Their own error.
And said, well, yeah, you're right, but the state, we all knew this, and the state sort of never pointed it out that, you know what, Medicaid program is essentially paying for people who are not Medicaid eligible.
Mm-hmm.
So the feds gave the state of New York 3 years to fix it. And that fix is going to affect in July of 2010, phased in over 3 years, which is why we're going to end up getting, our rate is going down from 300 a visit to about 160,
mm-hmm.
which is why you can see we need just about double the tax levy to keep it going. So, that has raised the issue for us, which frankly was an issue before that, about, should the county continue to provide, be the provider of mental health services? Not to say that those services are not needed in two out of those four communities, those facilities, Yonkers and Mount Vernon, those facilities are considered critical to the community. If you go out and ask the community, they'll say, this is a really important place, we access it. However, the other two, which are in the north part of the county, are not in much demand in terms of there is not a whole lot of new flow, which means the community is not really mm-hmm. in such great need of those two facilities. The other thing is that in every one of these towns, there is at least one other provider of the same service. So we have, in some towns, for example, in Mount Vernon, there are three mental health clinics in the same city of Mount Vernon. Not a super large place.
Are they all packed?
They are close to full, but if, for example, if we were to get out of the business and we were to, arrange with them, which we would all,
it
in advance.
Be up to the same standard that St. Vincent's would be.
Correct. We'd have a transition plan, and they would be given essentially the okay to expand.
Mm-hmm.
So one opportunity we have potentially in every one of these towns is to essentially consider transferring or privatizing of the clinics, which would make it so that the service could still be provided. So from a community perspective, it's still there. It simply would not be operated by the county. And I think that is a direction that we are leaning toward, though no decision has been made. But it would be an opportunity for us in terms of savings of significant tax levy. On the flip side, we have, just so you know, the other part of that is we have about 42 employees that are involved in that system who would be displaced by the,
unless
so you know.
Unless they could be picked up by the other providers.
Right. And so one of the ways that I'm considering doing this would be we would issue essentially an RFP
mm-hmm.
to other providers. And one thing that I'm considering would be, since we write the RFP, we can kind of put in whatever conditions we want.
Mm-hmm.
One possibility that I've seen done elsewhere is that we could essentially say that we would require even, that for the first year of operation that our staff are retained,
mm-hmm.
And that, it gives, number one, it gives an opportunity for a more orderly transition
and
for the patients
yeah.
and continuity, and second is that it gives the staff a chance to kind of prove themselves
mm-hmm.
to the new, management to say, these are some really good people, you might want to consider keeping them.
What level of professionalism are we talking about in terms of your staff? Are they mostly nurses and physicians, or are they A-type people?
They're really basically four types. There are clerical staff who are responsible for checking people in, billing, and secretarial type work. We have clinical social workers, we have psychologists, and we have psychiatrists. So they're at all levels in terms of their experience and training.
Clerical people would be most vulnerable.
If I may, the we went through the Department of Health doing this very same thing with its Yonkers Women's Clinic, and the transfer to the neighborhood clinics worked out very well, and we put some extra money in the budget to make sure that they had translation services and things. And I know from sitting on the Board of Health, and I mentioned this yesterday, that I don't know where we'll go with this and what, but I know in one of the presentations to the county executive in terms of reducing costs further, reducing the budget further, that one of the things the Department of Health has recommended is to stop subsidizing the neighborhood clinics.
Right.
Part of their rationale is because the neighborhood clinics can get a higher Medicaid rate than the county can.
That's right. I think that's $2-3 million. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the amount, but yeah, it's a few million.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, they're going to miss it because nobody likes to have their funding reduced. But the reality is that you're right, that their rates are actually better than ours for doing the same service. So, I mean, this is an area that, again, nothing's been decided, but it really looks like something we should seriously consider. 45 years ago when we started the clinics, It made sense to do it because we were, in fact, the safety net. There were no other providers in many cases, and if we weren't there, no one else would do it. That has all changed in the last 45 years, and yet we're still doing it. So something to keep in mind. So that's the clinics. I'm going to skip letter B on that page. I'm just going to give you just, again, some highlights. I want to go to the next page where it says adult mental health care coordination, which I know I've talked about several times here, but I want to give you a quick update on that. The premise behind care coordination was that we all know that we have a small portion of citizens that use a disproportionate share of resources because they have high needs. Mm-hmm. And I saw this for years and years as a practicing, you know, physician and working in hospitals. People sort of circulate around to emergency rooms, and they tend to need a lot of services when you have either a serious physical illness or a mental illness or a drug problem. And what we decided to do 2-3 years ago was to start this program in which we would try to break the cycle of that circling around. One, because the health outcomes for those patients were poor. They just simply keep cycling around. And two was, it's extremely expensive. So we put in place a new program called the Care Coordination Program, which was a pilot that I know you guys have heard about. But the pilot basically, and we're supportive of and we appreciate it, started with 48 individuals. What we essentially did was we asked the state, give us the names of the 48 most expensive individuals in the county in terms of these kinds of needs, people who had high health, mental health, drug and alcohol. Many of them had homeless issues at times. Some had had involvement with police because they, you know, either because of the health reasons or as a side effect, they were, you know, unable to maintain themselves in housing, et cetera. So we put this program in place. To give you an idea, on the next page where it says enrollee costs at the top, I've shown this before, but just that's a sample of a single, of an average individual in the program. And if you look to the right column.
What's RPC?
RPC is a state psychiatric hospital.
Oh,
basically an inpatient.
Welcome psychiatric.
Yeah.
Yep. If you look all the way to the right, you will see this is on average. We were spending $167,000 for 1 year of services for one person, which is like obscene. And the individuals were not doing well. They were just not doing well. And that's because of this fragmented care. You know, the system, you know, we patch people up, we send them out, we wish them good luck, and then they end up in trouble again. So we started this program with support both from the county executive's office and from this board. You can look at the bottom. We essentially spend $176,000 per year providing the program, which is the cost of one person, essentially, is what the program, not even, I mean, a little bit more. So that's what the program costs. If you go to the next page with the first graph, you will see essentially on that graph, I'm showing the results of the program. Here's what we did. We collected data for 1 year before people enrolled in the program so we could see their costs, and that was that $167,000. Then what we did was we measured the costs of providing care, where did they end up, what service did they use in the year after they enrolled, to see, of course, if we were making a difference. Otherwise, there's no point in doing it. And what you can see is that the average Medicaid costs went up a drop. The reason is because we got people, if you look at the second and third graphs, jail costs were cut in half, and state hospital costs were cut in half. So essentially, people got out of institutions, so we saved a lot on that end, but we had to pay for a little bit of community services, and that's why on the Medicaid, general Medicaid category, there's a slight increase. But and by the way, this is for only 14 of the 48. These were the first 14 people to rotate through the program, to complete the program. So by extrapolation, you're talking 48 people. You can multiply these savings by roughly 3, and that's how it's coming out. So we expect, if you look at the bottom table, we've saved approximately $529,000 on 14 people. So if you multiply that times roughly 3.5 to get 48, we're expecting about $1.5 million savings on a $176,000 investment. And these people are doing well. They're living in the community. They're healthier. They're staying out of institutions, out of emergency rooms. The other thing, just to look at the next page, you can see that the average number of days homeless was cut in half. So we've got, you know, savings on the shelter end, which is incredibly expensive to keep people in shelters and not a great way to live, of course. And then if you look at the last slide, it's on chemical dependency, you can see that we almost tripled the number of people who agreed and enrolled in drug treatment programs, which is very difficult to get some of these folks to get in, but they once they join our program, they get in. And we doubled the number of people going to self-help groups, which are things like attending AA meetings, which is, of course, a zero-cost option. So to extend that in terms of that's the kind of the old information. The new information is we are now in discussions with 6 counties in the western part of New York State who are basically doing a similar thing.
How are you? Commissioner.
How are you doing? We are basically now in communication with 6 other counties upstate to form a 7-county, what could be, a 7-county consortium in which we would have a memorandum of understanding, which is still being drafted for everyone to look at, but would basically say that we're all signed on to this way of delivering services for this high-risk, high-cost population. We're pretty close to having the MOU ready to go. And essentially what we would have is with the 7 counties, we would have about 3.5 million citizens covered by the program. Why is that important? Because we believe that we're going to be able to negotiate with our elected officials in Albany and DC to get more funding and to say, hey, look, this thing is growing. It isn't just Westchester. You've got to kind of listen to us. And of course, with healthcare reform on the front burner, to me, this is the time it makes, although it may be on the back burner now, but it makes sense. This is, to me, you know, we've talked about this before, is a no-brainer. It's a very inexpensive program with pretty easy, results. So we are trying to really use what hopefully will be the power, if you will, of the 3.5 million and the 7 counties, and maybe more in the future, to be able to push this as a policy. Because these people exist in every town, in every county across the country. It's not unique. So that is, we're close to that. We are close to having an MOU between the 7 counties. So that's something relatively new in terms of our extension.
Close. How close?
Within the next 3 months, we should have it ready for everyone to review. Here's the extension of this. One more thing about it is that what the state has started to take notice of this program and is agreed in principle, though the details have to be worked out. The next step in this process is to allow us to manage the Medicaid dollars that come into the system. In other words, right now we've got pilot money from the county, okay? What we really feel is that this money, Medicaid money, is being wasted because these folks, it's in a fee-for-service system, they just travel around, they get whatever. What we said to the state was, wouldn't it be great if you could allow us to take a portion of the Medicaid dollars that come into each one of these counties, let us put it toward this, for those high risk, put it toward these people. We think we can save the state Medicaid dollars and the folks who are in the program will do better in terms of their outcomes. And the state has actually agreed to it. So we have not worked out the details, but that's a real big step to get them, because that Medicaid system is rigid and it's huge and it's bureaucratic, but they have said in principle that they like the idea. There's enough data between our county and the six other counties to justify going forward with a with that type of thing. So it looks like in either second half of 2010 or 2011, that we may in fact have access to some of those Medicaid dollars to put towards doing this on a larger scale, which would be great.
That sounds great. Anyone have any questions or comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. It's good seeing you up there, Madam Chair. the question I have for you, Commissioner, good seeing you, of course. How much money are you talking about that they're allowing you to cut out? And what savings might that generate for the county?
Well, that's the detail we haven't gotten to. In other words, they haven't told us what portion.
It was always in the detail.
So I don't know. But it clearly would have, it should have an impact, or could have an impact, even though we're at our cap.
Right.
It could have an impact because of, obviously, the county share. So I don't know yet. Essentially, they're saying that they would allow us to manage the fee-for-service portion of the Medicaid system for the county. There is, of course, the managed care side, where they feel that there already is someone looking and managing expenses over there. But there's still a big portion of our population that's in a fee-for-service Medicaid system. So that's the portion of the system we're saying, let us try to manage that. The way managed care has traditionally worked is that you've got someone sitting in Wisconsin who you have to call up to get permission to get things done. What we're saying is, let us manage it locally, because we think better the needs of the community in terms of some of these people, we know them. And so we think the county level is the perfect level to manage this kind of program. What we've done is we have already met with, and the six counties upstate have already come, they're close to signing a contract with a managed care company, not to manage the care, but there's a lot of back office stuff that has to be done, paying claims. You know, there is a lot of stuff that we don't have any expertise in doing. Collecting data on how the program is doing, et cetera. So we could not do this alone. We would need a managed care company to do a lot of the administrative function, but we would manage the care portion. So I think it looks like it's going to happen. And then I'll be able in the second half of the year to present the MOU for, consideration and review.
Now, as long as through the committee that we could get the kind of, even if it's some rough estimates, because when we're looking for identifying opportunities to save down the road, it certainly would be helpful to understand how that would impact. And
absolutely.
So. And then I've asked a different question, but outside of your meeting about the mental health and the prison and the medical center.
Yes.
Deal. So,
should I address that now? I mean, I'm happy to, whatever you like.
That's the next thing.
It is.
Next slide, anyway.
You don't even have the handout here. Criminal Justice and Forensic Services. Just to bring up the date on that, I mean, I think I had met with the Medical Center about a month ago regarding their intent to withdraw from provision of forensic services, health and mental health. They say initially it was precipitated by the Office of Mental Health, who in fact did say to the forensic unit, which is a licensed mental health unit inside the jail, that they were no longer going to license the unit. The interesting thing is that unit was inspected by the state about 6 months prior to this meeting, and it was given a green light, stamp of approval, said it was fine. And then they come back and say, you got 30 days to surrender the license. And I said, well, wait a second. You've licensed this unit for 39 days. What's going on? And of course they said, well, we just feel like this is the only, and it's true, this part is true. It's the only licensed unit of its type in the state. There are no licensed inpatient mental health units inside county jail anywhere in the state. It's the only one like it. But that's not the real reason. The real reason was the Department of Justice videotapes and report in which they were afraid that at some point they'll end up on 2020 or somewhere else. And they will be on the hook for having licensed this unit and said that it was essentially fine when there are, in fact, according to them, they have seen some of the videotapes. Mm-hmm. I have not. And that a couple of them involved the treatment of people with mental illness inside the jail. And that they were really not happy with what was going on with the treatment of those particular individuals who were in the videotape. Now, I haven't seen them. I don't know specifically what that was. but they made a decision, we're not going to license the unit, and gave us 30 days. So basically what we did was, and the medical center then said, well, if you're not going to license, we're going to give notice. And Michael Israel told me we want out of the business anyway, and right. we were going to get out anyway. I'm not, it's an awful coincidence that that's all happening at the same time that the support for the medical center was withdrawn, but speculation. I don't know what the real issues are.
They've also said at our financial review committee, they have spoken about that a number of times, one of the rationale being that it's not really
core
the
mission.
It's not
right.
the core mission.
And that's to a degree that's true. I think the issue is that what they told me was that they were losing money on the contract.
Yeah.
Now, when I reviewed the contract and looked at it, I didn't see anywhere that they were losing. I just don't see the loss that they were claiming was going on. Mm-hmm. Basically, they submit their vouchers. We have paid them. They've been mostly within budget. I think 1 year they went over a little bit, and we made, you know, the difference was made up. I just don't see mm-hmm. the loss. So from that point of view, I didn't see it. From the core mission point of view, I understand that. What we told the Office of Mental Health was, in essence, you're violating your own transition policy that I was telling you about
mm-hmm.
earlier, that 30 days is in no way sufficient to be able to put something else in place, because just because you close these services doesn't mean the need goes away.
Mm-hmm.
So we essentially told the state, you got to give us more time. You know, I knew we were in trouble because there was a room with about 12 people in it when we were called up to this meeting. Nine of them were attorneys from the state. And you know, three of them were, you know, other folks, and I said, "Oh my God, they wanted out.
Too many lawyers.
They wanted out, and they wanted it clear. They wanted out." So we negotiated 6 months, which they've given us. So now we have till I believe June 30th to come up with an alternative way to provide those services within the jail. We went up and visited Fishkill Correctional Facility about 2 weeks ago because they have allegedly, according to the state. State sent us there and said, this is a model program in which they deliver those services without a license, and we support it. We think they're doing a great job. Go up and see what they're doing and see if you couldn't do something similar at the county jail.
Without a license?
Correct.
Cool.
Licensed, I should say, through corrections. In other words, it would be licensed through as a correctional service under the accrediting body for corrections.
Not
meaning no license no. From the department, from the state health or mental health. That's what they're talking about.
And what impact does that have either fiscally or service-wise?
Well, in essence, you cannot call it an inpatient unit because you can't run an inpatient unit without a license. So what Fishkill does is they run what they call a crisis unit, which is essentially a hospital that's called something else, where you can stay for a period of, you know, 6 to 10 days till you are stabilized. And then what they essentially do is they have a step-down unit, which is basically in the general population, but with a little bit more in the way of health and mental health attention paid to those in special housing block, which we have now. And then what they have is the state provides a backup, and they told us they would provide a backup, which is central New York, quite a distance away, runs a forensic facility, and they said basically they would be willing to allocate 2 beds in that facility for us to use as a backup for anyone who doesn't get well within that sort of 10-day period. We could transport them with our correction officers up to central New York, where there would be a bed waiting for them if they were to need longer.
And that would be a secure bed?
Those are, yeah, that's a forensic facility.
You might want to hear this because this is with public safety. I'm sorry.
We're talking about a secure bed.
We're talking about the secure beds. Now, the ward commissioner on in the correctional facility right now, the mental health beds, the ones that are quote unquote in the forensic unit,
yes.
is 10
yes,
beds,
right? Well, there's a capacity for, I believe, 15 actually.
There's more capacity.
There's more capacity, but they typically only use between 8 and 10.
So they have 8 and 10, and
right.
When we asked this at the fiscal meeting with the medical center, I can't remember what the normal census was.
About 8. They told me on average it's about 8.
So eight people are in census now.
Right.
So
and the corrections department told us about 8 to 10 average, on an average.
Right.
So but the bottom line is that just on that particular thing on the forensics alone, we would be six beds short right off the bat.
Well, essentially, what I said to them is, how do you operate? Fishkill has 2,000 inmates. I said, how do you do that with no beds? Essentially, they have no beds. They're using this crisis unit, they call it, and they said, we don't have any need. We're essentially delivering intensive treatment without it being a hospital unit. So they said, what you need to do is divert majority of the current admissions, they say, could be successfully treated in a crisis unit, and they don't need inpatient. If you have the right people and services in place, you don't need the unit.
Okay, so you're still doing the analysis right now, so you haven't determined whether or not medically that
right.
makes sense.
Right.
Because that was the question. I mean, when we talked to the medical center folks about their issues and their shortfalls, some of it just happened that it seemed to be questions from the board in general, that it was their proposal. What they RFP'd for,
yes.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And what they accepted for whatever reasons, right? You know, whether it was extorted or not,
right?
Because
right?
There's claims that it was. But mm-hmm. the bottom line was that they said that they were going to do things a certain way, and that when they deliver services outside of the prison wards, that they lose money because now it's in the general hospital population, and they have to make those private rooms. That's what
right.
That's true. That's true.
And what we said to them is, why wouldn't you tell us what we need to do to upgrade our facility, right?
Right.
And we could spend money to do that,
right?
Right? And that was, no, we're working through that particular issue.
Okay.
We didn't hear back from you. But Madam Chair, that particular issue, as far as the mental health piece of it, it sounds like it definitely needs a lot of oversight from
yes.
your committee to determine whether or not the suggestions that are being presented make sense, and whether or not we need to add this particular thing to our state legislative package, because OMH being chicken that they're going to end up on 2020 is not a reason for us getting
well,
rid of a program in our
award.
In our accredited facility, if I recall correctly,
yeah.
it is an award-winning facility
yes,
too, right? So I'm not sure why that kind of makes sense.
Well, they won't say what the reason is, but the timing, after 39 years and a 6 month ago review being positive, they won't say. They simply said what goes on there is violates, and it does in fact technically violate Office of Mental Health standards. I'll give you one example. At night, the individuals who are in the forensic unit are locked in their cells. That is considered a restraint and that's considered a form of, if you look at OMH policy, that's considered a form of restraint because they are locked in. Now, I know it's a jail.
Yeah. I was just going to say,
when they discussed that on the telephone, we took exception to that, especially when the report indicated that we were a model facility.
Well, that's absolutely right.
But everything else was model, and then the federal government came back and wanted us to sign a consent. We weren't doing it.
But you know what essentially they were doing? Essentially what they were doing over the last 39 years is they were waiving some of those requirements, which are clear. That you can't, in a psychiatric hospital, for example, outside the jail, you cannot lock someone in their room like that. So the reality is they knew full well what was going on. This was not new. They simply were looking the other way to it, and they've decided, for whatever reason, they're not going to look the other way. It is not a change. The jail's doing the same thing they've been doing for years that has been acceptable, and it is now, we're being told, it's no longer acceptable. And the OMH attorney said, out. There was no discussion. We said, well, can we look at making some changes that might meet this? No. This is the only unit of its type we license, and we're not going to do it anymore.
Wow.
That's the end of it. So there didn't seem to be any room to negotiate other than to give us more time to find an alternative plan. They said, why should we license your unit? Everyone else has found other ways to deliver the service without a license, and that's what we want you to do. And they arranged for us, and they were present when we went to Fishkill, because they held it up as a model program without any licenses except a correctional oversight. There are some correctional standards around that. That's how they do it, and they say it works fine. And they've had, you know, very few incidents. Here's the problem. 2,000 inmates, they were using 27 FTEs to deliver that service for 2,000 inmates. Now, we have, as you know, an average of 1,500 inmates. We have nowhere near 27 FTEs delivering that service now. So there could be cost implications to doing it.
That's 27 full-time employees.
Just doing mental health services for 2,000 inmates.
27 wow. full-time employees?
Yep. And I asked them, I said, how many employees you got? 27 FTEs. I think we have six.
We have
500 less.
It's unbelievable. Yeah, and we have a lot of turnover. This is a stable Fishkill. Is a relatively stable population because you don't go there for 20 days.
Right.
You stay a while. Correct. Yeah. So basically, we have a lot of turnover, which makes it harder to do.
Right.
And we've got basically a quarter of the number of people. Here's the other interesting thing. Guess who the vendor is within Fishkill who delivers the mental health service? The New York State Office of Mental Health. The very people who won't relicense the unit.
And they are the
those are their employees working there on state payroll.
Well, Madam Chair, the only suggestion I would make is that between you and your committee, Madam Chair, and the chairman of public safety, that we should probably get something together that we can bring to the administration to say what our position is on this, which is I don't think so. Right? We have to come up with an answer that makes some sense.
We had that issue going on, and I think both Bob Meehan and Kevin Plunkett had said they want to meet, and I think the county executive went out there for a tour today, and I believe he was going to try to, maybe set up some things to find out where the position is and where we stand with that whole report.
One other thing I should tell you is that...
Right, Katie? You're not speaking.
Yes, our county executive and deputy was at the correction facility this morning regarding what they saw and everything. I haven't been briefed yet.
I don't know if they went specifically on this. I know he wanted to tour the facility and he was going to meet.
Right.
And Bob said he wanted to speak to them about the...
But it's a competency
report.
It's a combination with the medical, because with the medical center contract and this is one. It's got an overlap, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's that one piece with community services, but with the Department of Justice report, that's public safety, and again, this is where that link is. But we need the expertise. Of you to say to us that that's not making sense to you.
Well, here's what we're thinking about. I should add two other things. One is that I had the sense when I met with the medical center a month ago that if the county felt strongly that they wanted them to continue to do it, they might. Now, I don't know if that's changed now. Might consider continuing to do it. The second thing is that New York Medical College, as you know, is somewhat of a separate, though linked, entity. The New York Medical College folks sort of pulled me aside while we were on this Fishkill tour and said, the medical center may not want this piece of business, but we do.
Right,
and we would consider being the vendor, depending on the terms, to deliver, because it's our staff that are delivering the service right now without the medical center being in the middle. So we have, think we have a number of options that I just want to let you know that we're looking at, so that we can come back and say, here's some options
that's
for you
intriguing.
To consider.
And,
and that came from the chairman of the department, who said, we're interested in continuing.
Yeah.
We need the forensic. We need the jail as a training site, for example.
Yeah,
so they don't want to see it go. Right. And they're willing to talk to the county, to us separately from the medical center.
That's a good point.
Because it provides residency slots, right?
That's a good point.
Yep, because they have residents to train there, and
that's their value to the medical center, the medical college. That's where they get a lot of their residents from.
Okay.
You're welcome, boss. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Can we ask some more questions?
I think so.
I had two things that have come up most recently. I sit on the Board of Health, and there have been a lot of questions. Basically, with regards to how the budget was prepared and presented with the commissioner salaries, the 6 months worth for each. And the question I was asked was, is there a group similar to the Board of Health for mental health?
Absolutely.
Same structure. Is that?
It's called the Community Services Board, and it's the same. It's the equivalent of the Board of Health, only it's the board that
and this is Westchester County.
Correct. And they're it's very, very similar in structure to the Board of Health.
Is there a listing of where would we find out who got
it? They're probably on the website, but certainly, I could get you that list. But it's an oversight board.
Do they make policy?
They do.
Okay.
Yep. We bring issues. We meet monthly. I don't think we meet monthly. I think it's every other month.
Okay.
But when I looked at it and compared it to the Board of Health, there were a lot of similarities. They are an advisory board. There are providers, practitioners on the board. There are consumers on the board.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mix, and there are seats, and it's specified in legislation. It says we have to have three of these and three of these.
Oh, okay. And what legislation can it be found in? I mean, there's a for the Board of Health.
In the county. In the county. Trying to think of where it is. I can give you the reference.
Okay.
I'm trying to think of where it is. Because I thought it was in the county charter, but I'm not sure.
But it's not in the sanitary code.
No. No, okay. It's not. But I can give you a reference on that.
Okay.
Do you want to send us all a listing of the board?
And who
it's
puts...
It's board?
Yeah, who puts these
It's one
numbers?
Of the advisory boards that we appoint
so
to.
Amelia should have a list.
Yeah, that we have to, every year we have to.
Have you ever heard of this before?
No.
See, that was the problem. Nobody had heard of it even on the Board of Health.
Well, we'll get this through. We'll see what we've got.
Yeah,
and Grant will, if
maybe are they
Grant
county
sends
executive
you matches
departments?
Up with what Amelia's got,
yes.
Then we're okay.
Oh, they're all county executive appointments?
They have to be approved by.
How come we don't have
they have to be approved by, yes.
Liaison, like we do for
yes.
The county.
Good question.
There was, I mean, I was told before I got here that there was, in fact, a member of the Board of Legislators met years ago that sat, and there was a seat. Now, I don't know. Since I've been here, there has been no BOL representative on that board.
Somebody
and the terms,
do it.
Some of those folks have just expired because it's a multi-year term in December. Mm-hmm. So we're at the place now we're actually, appointing and reappointing. In some cases, you can serve two terms. I mean, there's bylaws, there's a whole structure.
I don't think this has ever come before the Board of Legislature.
It's fascinating.
If we're doing that also, George is being the liaison in coordinating the advisory boards, and I've been working with someone in the county executive's office that has been briefing me, and I actually was setting up the binder today.
Oh, wow.
So
that's funny.
I will let you know once we
have a problem.
Yeah, I don't know if maybe the Board of Legislators doesn't approve those. We tend to approve
right.
All of the others.
Right.
We
do BOH.
I
would
assume.
What's it called?
I was just getting
called
Community
Services
Board.
And it's an advisory board with appointments that go through the CE's office.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay, well, that'll make the Board of Health feel better.
Yeah. And that's our oversight.
So what is the county?
She should have the backup information. I'm assuming it is in the county charter.
Yeah. Oh, it is. That's what I thought. I thought it was in the county charter.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
We'll look into that. And the other question then obviously stems from this whole thing, too, is has any work been done, any more work been done about any possible merger of the two departments?
Studying? Not yet.
Okay.
Patsy and I were both in with Kevin and Rob last week,
mm-hmm.
and both of us really separately were asked, what should, essentially, what do you recommend
right.
we do? And I think there's... I think there has been, we've had some discussions about, does it make sense for some of the commissioners, deputies, and some to get together and see where there might be areas
mm-hmm.
of overlap. I think one of the concerns about that is that, just in having very preliminary discussions, is that people seem invested in keeping things the way they are. And so I don't know that we're going to actually get anywhere doing that, because people are saying, basically, we're happy the way it is, and that's the way we want to continue. I'm not sure we're...
New York City's done it, though, right?
Oh, absolutely, for years. And it's a huge... I mean, some people say this is... The departments are too big, and we're a big county. They've done it in some smaller counties, but New York City's done it, and actually a San Diego county did it.
Maybe we should go out there and look at that. I volunteer.
Road trip.
Actually, the interesting thing about San Diego is they did it, and they undid it. Because and they from what I understand is they did it, and however they did it, it did, they felt it wasn't working, and they actually split again. So my thought was to go to really do some more sort of online and other research and talk to other people about where they've done it, why did they do it, what have been the advantages, what have been the successes, what have been the risks, the failures, the downside. That's really what I think we need to do before, you know, a decision
kind of
like that. Seems like it, because I just, like I said, I first proposed that we all get together, and then I had a couple of talks with folks over there, including Patsy, and I found myself feeling like this is not going to work unless there's some other folks who can ask the questions, who have some sense of of interest in really looking at whether it makes sense, as opposed to just saying it should stay the way it is. Because I'm just, that's my thought.
Well,
people are
going to, you don't want to defend your turf.
Exactly. And that's not, you know, to me is not productive.
Well, I know that the Board of Health has asked through me if they can, whatever discussions go on, they would really like to be
part of
a study, whatever.
Yeah, makes sense. It makes sense. So maybe that would be the interim proposal.
We are entitled the liaison, and
it's been vacant for years and years and years.
That's so
long
weird.
Before, yep.
Oh, Andrea Kosas.
She's great.
She just finished her term in December.
Oh, okay.
So she's been in for two terms, so she's done.
You know, she hasn't been the Board of Legislators liaison since 2006.
She's been the chair. She's actually been the chair of the board.
Yes, she was the chair. I did know
she's
that.
Been the chair of the board.
I didn't know this was her board, but I know she...
Yes, it is.
I know she loves you.
Well, that's nice to hear. She's wonderful.
Yeah. All right. So we can have some more.
So, yeah, I mean, I think something like that, you know, does make some sense, because I feel like we're not getting... I'm not sure how we really are going to proceed.
Yes.
With that kind of, you know, with that kind of decision. And, you know, meanwhile, you know, you have a health department that now has no physician at the helm, which it's required to do by state.
Well, she's an acting.
Yes, but I'm saying
But we could get a waiver.
Oh, you can.
Yes, that
I
was
did
looked
not
into.
Even know that.
Yeah, that was looked into, and the state has and will has done it before and will give a waiver.
Wow.
Because, you know, she's a PhD. In public health. So they will give an MD waiver.
Okay.
But if who knows? But right now, as the question was, as acting, does it matter? And the answer came back from legal saying, no, it doesn't matter if it's an acting.
Right.
But for a true commissioner,
you
it's an MD or you have
waiver.
To have a waiver.
Gotcha.
And it's a state granted waiver.
Okay.
What about community mental health?
Interesting. Community mental health does not require an MD.
Really?
Does not.
Does it require a psychological professional?
Yes. You have to be either a psychologist, psychiatrist, or a psychiatric social worker.
Oh.
Does not require an MD. In fact, it hasn't been an MD in this county for probably 35 years until I came.
You know, I had a feeling.
It was very unusual.
Your
predecessor
was a PhD.
That's right. And the one before that was a master's in public health, and the one before that... So it's been a long time, and
okay.
You know,
interesting.
Yeah, it's been some time.
Wow.
Can we go on with your?
Yeah, I can wrap up. I can actually wrap up because I know it's. Sorry for going long. So that's the forensics. I'm going to skip one sentence about Bazelon Center. The Bazelon Center is located in D.C. and is a think tank on issues of forensic mental health. Often tapped by Congress for testimony about any issues in that area. We have been picked along with, you can see, Allegheny County, Pennsylvania, Oregon, Texas, and Michigan to be part of a study because of our forensic mental health services. Things like, you probably know we have the police ride-around program, which has been very successful in White Plains and Yonkers, where we have a social worker riding around with police to intervene. So they heard about us, and so we're part of this study, which should be interesting in terms of collecting data on the success of the program. I'm not going to talk too much about housing, children's mental health services. Just to wrap up, under D, Development of Disability Services, you may know that we had an autism task force.
Oh. To Melanie's question.
Over the last maybe year and a half, it was formed, and the task force completed its work about 6 months or so ago, and or several months ago, and we are now in 2010. We're going to begin to implement some of the committee's recommendations. So that is just beginning. We're getting the committee back together for implementation. of the recommendations. They really did a fabulous job, came up with some really great things, understood that resources were going to be limited and that, you know, we didn't have an endless amount to spend, but I think did a really fabulous job.
That's great.
So that's going to happen this year.
Is ComEd
what
not
does
here
fair
on that?
Mean?
Yes.
Oh, good.
What does fair mean at the very last one?
Oh, it's funny. We've become known at Westchester County. Our department provides some support to a not-for-profit organization that operates an autism fair, meaning that vendors come and basically display services that are available for individuals and families with autism. And that fair has grown, I think it's only been in existence for 3-4 years. It has grown just tremendously to the point where it's held at the county center. We've needed more and more space every year. And we've started drawing people from 3 states because it's just become a real source of information for families you know, who are struggling with a family member with autism.
Does that have a budgetary component?
Our only portion is that we our department provides and pays for the space at the county center. And that's really the only, it's a couple $1,000s maybe a year that we put in. The rest of the funds for the event are provided by this not-for-profit. So our commitment financially is not
they rent
really
food space, in other words.
Correct. Because there are, right, the vendors pay.
Yeah.
So it's not a costly kind of mm-hmm. event, and it's really, really well attended. So that's that. Drug and alcohol, just to mention TASC. I mean, you all know about TASC. Unfortunately, TASC has been a target of state funding cuts, not just our program, all of them. For the last 3 years, we've lost money every single year in terms of state support for TASC, which means the tax levy support for TASC, which is the other big chunk of our 6, 7, 8 million, 1.5 million in tax levy for TASC. However, the data continues to support the savings that TASC in terms of alternatives to incarceration. This year alone, about $33 million in savings because we diverted, I forgot what the number was, somewhere around 3,400 people were diverted from jail into treatment instead. A lot of them were DWI, first-time DWI cases, who the feeling was that spending 15 days in jail was probably, if you had an alcohol problem, was not going to fix the problem, and that we probably ought to look at treatment so that maybe we'll reduce the repeat offenders.
And $300 a day.
And that's the other
thing.
That's
nothing.
Correct. So TASC, I think, though we do put $1.5 million in tax levy, clearly has that savings by keeping people out of jail.
Well, that ran out of money a couple of years ago when I first joined the Criminal Justice Board, and we pushed some money in, but it still ran out by the end of the year.
And I'll tell you what's happened. Every time the state's cut our funding in the last 3 years, I've cut staff. They cut 200,000. I have to cut another, you know, 2 FTEs. We've gone down from the number of staff we had. We're down about 5 staff from 3 years ago, and the caseload is rising. So instead of the average caseload in TASC is supposed to be 150 people per case manager, we have almost 500 per case manager. So what we're trying to do is use technology to reduce costs. So we're set up for video conferencing, and we're waiting for the jail to get set up so that we would be able, for example, to do our TASC assessments for the inmates without going there, which is a 4-hour process. By the time they get a car out of the motor pool and drive over, get through security, wait for the inmate to be brought up, do the assessment, get through the jail, get back with the car, it's about 4 hours. We can do those in 30 minutes using video conferencing.
Wow.
So we're going to use technology to expand our
capability. Do the inmates have the right to decline to do this?
Well, they yes, but they rarely do because this is how they get out. Once you,
so this
you know,
is the reverse.
Yes.
Yeah.
Once you get your assessment and you have a plan, you can get out.
Okay.
So we're not likely going to get many refusals.
Melanie, you had something you...
It's a mandated program to TASC, right?
If the judge orders it. If the judge orders it, then...
But we're mandated to TASC, right?
No.
No.
It could be... It could, for example, the county doesn't have to operate it. This is a program that could be theoretically privatized. The problem is that the judges and the attorneys and the DA's office, we've talked to all of them over the last couple of years, have all said, we want it to stay in the county because of accountability. You know, they can all pick up the phone and get to us when they have a case. The judges call us. They said, apparently years ago, it was mixed. County did some, and some not-for-profits did it. They had, they said they had a lot of trouble when it was you know, outsourced. So there's been a push to keep it in, even though it's, you know, it's theoretically it could be done by someone else. That's it.
What's the Anasazi solution?
Oh yeah, we
sounds like a great
you all book. You all actually passed. I guess it was in November. The technology $1 million actually for us in health to replace our software system.
Yes. Yes.
The name of
called?
The software is called Anasazi Solution.
Oh, that's very cool.
Now, we didn't actually buy the software because even though you approved that, we have not moved forward with that. But that's what that is.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Oh, and one last thing. How is Early Step Forward?
Early Step Forward is they're doing really well. The program is expanding rapidly. They've been able to get matching dollars. It's working fine. That's one of the programs where I'd like to talk to health some more about the relationship between Early Step Forward and early intervention.
Yeah.
Because I think there's some room there for potentially some collaboration and efficiencies. Mm-hmm. So that's one area we should look at working together more closely.
Well, Patsy's your person.
Absolutely.
I mean, she's state.
Yep.
No.
Yep.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate
thanks,
it.
Grant.
Okay, no problem.
And I'd like to have you come back maybe. I don't know if I think it would be too long a session to have you and Patsy come together.
Whatever you think.
But, all right, well, we can talk about it. But definitely.
Be happy to anytime.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very
thanks.
Much.
Okay, nice to meet you.
Thanks.
Any comments?
I would make a recommendation that you get on this, get yourself on this board.
I intend to.
Community Services Board. I found the past 3 years that I've been on the Board of Health, I have found it really, really valuable to provide sort of a legislative voice, and I can bring things back to the board, and then I can take things back to them, and it's not just operating out in this vacuum somewhere. You know?
Those of us who serve on these boards, I do the Criminal Justice Advisory Board, Vito does the Parks Board, Judy's on the Board of Health, I don't know
Barbara.
Who else.
Dodds does planning board, I know.
Yeah, well, I'm going to start going to that, too.
Okay.
But it's a really useful thing. And if you tie it in with your community work and your personal interests, you get so much more out of this. And then there's just so much discussion we can have here, whereas these guys go into crazy depth. Mm-hmm. So it's really great.
Yeah, it's very helpful.
It ties in with my interests, so I think
I'll
definitely follow.
And then maybe what we could do as a possibility, maybe one of the steps, especially if you want to get it out of the actual departments where people are employed and are, you know, they've got their silos, take it to have these two boards perhaps meet together and start looking, and possibly meet with Patsy and Grant and start looking at areas that could be consolidated.
Ooh, that'll freak out the administration.
But at least there, it's not the people who are earning their bread and butter.
They don't have a fiefdom to present.
No, they don't.
Well, it's not that. It's out of the administration's control.
Well, then we'll get the administration as well. I mean, I don't think...
They don't want to be in at the beginning anyway. They only want to be in at where the results are coming.
Oh, no, they don't. They want to make sure that we don't run amok. Remember how much trouble we got in for fooling around with this during the budget process?
Yes.
The county executive threatened to redo the whole budget.
Oh.
So, but anyway, it sounds like a terrific idea.
It's a good start.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you've got your work cut out for you there, too.
In only that one area.
But it would be interesting to find out. No, but to find out whether these people all need to come before appointments committee.
Yeah, well, the older list of appointments have been on here.
Yeah, it's
so
just
most
to appoint
them.
Halfway,
see, so
it says
through.
BOL.
Yeah.
These are BOL
confirmations. Yeah, you've confirmed them. Let's see.
Oh, here was one in on.
Oh, there's 09, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Yeah, oh, these are expirations.
Yeah.
The last time the BOL confirmed anybody
was
in 07?
March of
07?
Oh, no,
there was somebody
March
in 09.
Who?
Were you on?
No. William Magwood?
March 23rd. So that one had gone through Lois.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was on the committee.
Yeah.
It may have been a reappointment, which is why we didn't find any other person.
Oh, I bet it was. Yeah. I bet a lot of these people have been on for a long time. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Oh, this
and member psychiatrist. Oh, there's a vacancy for a psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. Then there's a physician, consumers, voluntary sector, certified social worker, BOF. And then two ex officios who are obviously haven't done anything for a long time.
What? Who are the ex officios?
All right, so we're going to be 3:15 from now?
Yeah. That would be great.
3:15 on Tuesdays, and I think what I would like to do, if everyone's agreeable, is next Tuesday we can see if Patsy's available to come.
She's available. We have confirmation today.
Great. All right, so next Tuesday we'll
have Tuesday, which is February
2nd.
Groundhog Day.
Oh, yes it is.
What's that?
I feel that it's a holiday.
Consider it a national
work.
Holiday.
No.
It's a religious holiday.
It's a religious holiday.
A religious
Me and
holiday.
The other druids.
But he will have already seen the shadow.
We'll
by
know.
That time.
We'll know.
Yeah.
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 Okay. Well, Tony Phil usually gets it wrong.
Yes. Yes.
All right, so next
exactly.
Tuesday at 3:15.
Sounds
Got
good.
It. Thank okay. you. Oh, motion to adjourn?
So move.
Second. Okay.
Second.
Good meeting, Alpha.
Good job.
It's always been my favorite committee.
Thank you.
Well,
and this is always the friendly committee.
But and then you get to regularly have your name brought before the public by Ed Reilly.
Oh God,
Judith Myers.
All right,
Hillary baby.
But last time he said it wrong, so maybe I can now say it's not me. Last time he said Judith.